course, what better way than to use China Crisis and King in a Catholic style to actually begin to wrap up the last sequence we'll be doing for 2014 before we magically move into 2015. And, of course, welcome our ace royal correspondent and film critic and general top soul. Of course, that would be the fantastic Richard Fitzwilliams. Good morning, Richard. How are you?
Greetings,
all. Well, exactly, sir. It's a sort of Southside special, this Channel 1 for Hospedia, and of course beyond. You can always access details via the podcast, southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com. What a year, interesting year, Richard. I mean, one looks at sort of times past. Obviously, it's the time of the year when we do tend to look back at the whole thing. Obviously, upcoming royal births to happen, all sorts of other fascinating things.
There's no doubt, as we look forward, the sibling for Prince George, I mean, absolutely no doubt that there will be tremendous interest. Obviously, not the same level that there was when George was born. But there still will be, and expect, despite raised eyebrows, expect waits outside hospitals and all the rest of it. I mean, there's no question that, it will be exciting. And also, next year, an important thing to remember, and that is the Queen, on the 9th of September 2015, becomes our longest reigning monarch, beating the record of Queen Victoria. So that too is something to look forward to.
Emeritus Schroeder Professor in the Department of German and Dutch at the University of Cambridge, Nicholas Boyle, wrote a book 4 years ago, actually back in 2010, entitled 2014, How to Survive the Next World Crisis. And his theory in that particular line, which I think I'm sure as a historian and scholar, Richard, you'd be interested in, is that basically all the major historical events of the past five centuries have hinged on events in the middle of their second decades. For instance, Martin Luther nailed his theses to the door of Wittenberg Church in 1517. The Thirty Years' War started in 1618. The European settlement and Hanoverian succession was in 1714. The Congress of Vienna in 1815. And, of course, the start of the First World War in 1914. So it's really crunch time for the 21st century, it would seem, in the next couple of years. Is that your thought in terms of the period 2014 to 18? Could, as Nicholas Boyle says, bring a major event or complex of events that will reveal the character of the century to come?
Well, I am not one of Macbeth's witches who could look into the seeds of time and see which grains would grow. Not that is my answer. I think that, I mean, there are those who, of course, are prophets and those who interpret their prophecies and events, believing that the events have borne out what they've said. And I mean, this is an area where, you know, there is such debate. I leave that to those, the seers, the prophets, those who believe they, you know what's happening in the future. But I'm not sure that anybody does. I do think, obviously, there are certain pointers. I wish we knew, for example, whether the United Kingdom would be together in the way we knew it in 10, 20, 50 years. How can one know? It's a dangerous business, prediction. Predicting elections, that's perhaps easier because you've got statistics and you've got precedents and you've also got trends. When you look at trends internationally, well, obviously, I mean, the Middle East and ISIL, but, I mean, again, there's North Korea, there's the situation in Iran, there's Ebola. These are 2 years ago, if you'd said ISIL, I wouldn't have known what you meant. So I leave the business of predictions to others. Much better to look back. Look back, for example, to a year that was sort of very interesting and an enormously successful royal year, because if you look at William and Kate's visit with George to the Antipodes, I mean, that was fantastic. And as was their visit, of course, they both went to New York and William went on to Washington and met the president. There's no doubt a tremendously successful royal year with Prince Harry as well, bringing the Invictus Games to London.
Yes, indeed, and I think the last thing we'll say from Nicholas Boyle's line is that his thoughts are that the United Kingdom may yet break apart, and although the rest of the world could no doubt manage without it, its disappearance would be a geopolitical earthquake and a poor augury for the stability of the century to come.
Well, I mean, it could. Yes, it could.
Anyway, moving on to other sort of areas. So we talked about, obviously, predicting the future, whether you actually see it in terms of the silver screen. Many people would say it's the dreams of the silver screen that define so much of the 20th century. In the 21st century, screens are still very much there, but these days it's a case of online stuff. Witness the interview. Mind you, you're not really sure if you're seeing the real version or the hacked version, I suppose.
Well, this was a unique form of cyber warfare. There's absolutely no doubt that a matter that Sony will never forget. The seriousness of that, I mean, legally, the data that goes online, what's been leaked and so forth, I mean, that will be with the company for a long time, and also the revelations of comments, racist overtones, sexism in Hollywood, and the fact that top actresses are paid less than actors, all of this. I mean, it's been a very, very unhappy year for Sony. I haven't seen the interview yet, and obviously I will, I think hundreds of thousands will. It appears to be mildly amusing, according to what reviews I've read.
Well, of course, mildly amusing can be damned with faint praise.
Well, it certainly can when it comes to North Korea, who did not think that it was in any sense palatable, but no doubt at all that, I mean, the death hardly exists in North Korea, and I don't think, at least I hope, it will not be possible to launch that sort of cyber strike again, but that it should have been done over a film. Yes, indeed, it shows the power of art in one sense or another, even if James Franco and Seth Rogen are not acting in what one would call a great work of art.
As we look ahead to 2015 in the cinema, it looks as though it's going to be another year for the blockbusters. Not only have we got Spectre, we've got the Star Wars issue coming through, so the next episode of Star Wars by J.J. Abrams. We've got Avengers Age of Ultron. No real signs that cinema is actually losing its nerve when it comes to the mega complex blockbuster.
Well, there's never been any question for a long time that these science fiction movies are tremendously popular, and the most popular, or perhaps one of the most likable in the last year, The Guardians of the Galaxy. I've no doubt about that at all. Absolutely none. But if you had the year that saw the Transformers and Godzilla, and also stretching out series, I do have to make the point that The Hunger Games Mockingjay Part 1, The Hobbit, The Battle of the Four Armies, all of this, it was stretched out by both in both series, and I'm a great admirer of The Hunger Games. I enjoy it enormously, and I'm a great admirer of Peter Jackson, and I think he did miracles with Lord of the Rings. But let's not pretend that both these movies weren't, in a sense, at least partly superfluous. I mean, this is, they're playing games with the box office. I can see why, obviously.
And of course, before we know where we are, we'll be slap bang in the middle of the awards season, which seems to sort of launch the year and then carry on pretty much until sort of March, April time, really.
Well, we are. I mean, but in the 8th of January, with BAFTA nominations, on the 11th of January, the Globes, where Boyhood and Birdman fight it out. Alessandro González Iñárritu's Birdman will probably, well, it'll win Best Musical or Comedy, but it will, as director, he'll, I think, lose to Richard Linklater in Boyhood, because it's such a marvellous feat over nearly a dozen years to bring the same cast together to create that, and I think that's marvellous, and I really do. You know, it was a beautiful film. So many good male performances, and far, far fewer first-class female performances. I've yet to see Julianne Moore in Still Alice, but that's the one that is undoubtedly booked for winning Best Actress at the Oscars and also winning at the Globes. But if you look at the male performers, I mean, good gracious, we Oscar Isaacs in A Most Violent Year, Jake Gyllenhaal in The Nightcrawler, Benedict Cumberbatch as Alan Turing in The Imitation Game, Eddie Redmayne as Professor Stephen Hawking in The Theory of Everything, David Oyelowo as Martin Luther King, and so on. I mean, there is a tremendously impressive list, not to mention Michael Keaton in Birdman. I mean, it really is fantastic.
Talking about the fantastic, it seems as though you're looking to get your own entry in the Guinness Book of Records for most interviews done with international organisations on the subject of Ridley Scott's latest opus, Columbia, recently, I gather, Richard.
Yes, it's I think it's 25 interviews so far on the movie Exodus, and that's, so that's radio for all the regions, and a very large number of local radios, and Five Live and others, yes. I mean, it's... I was fascinated by it. I accept that the ending is extremely weak. There's no doubt it's drawn a tremendous amount of controversy, and also most reviews have not been favourable, although certain reviews have been very favourable. But it would be interesting to see how it does at the box office. It was number one at the US in the first week, and then there was a huge drop. But it's, I must say, the way he handles the massive, spectacular scenes are marvellous. And I really think also that it's well performed. It's interesting, the characters, Christian Bale as Moses and Joel Edgerton as an inadequate pharaoh. But the use of a child as God, rather weird. I mean, it's challenging to bring the story to audiences these days. Noah was, apart from Passion of the Christ, which was exceptional, and also Gibson's own movie, and highly controversial, over the last 50 years, it was only Noah before, and Noah was part science fiction. So this was an added challenge for Ridley Scott, and then he's quirky and idiosyncratic at the best of times. I got a lot out of this movie. It was certainly good fun to review it.
Probably a difficult question to answer, but if you could actually have a word with Cecil B. DeMille, who of course did the Ten Commandments not once but twice in his career, the silent version of course, and then followed that up in the 1950s with Charlton Heston, how do you think he would view Ridley Scott's work?
Well, I think it's more a question of how we view Cecil B. DeMille's work. I mean, Cecil B. DeMille did one good thing in his life, in my opinion, and that is the rather affecting portrayal of him as himself in Sunset Boulevard. That was good. As far as his epics were concerned, for 40 years, he gave epics a bad name.
No.
And so many of his films were so consistently nonsensical that it became almost impossible when there were serious epics, as there were some in the 1960s. The word simply had echoes of DeMille. Yes, I think he would feel that it would be that his movie was truer to what is in Scripture, which is perfectly true. It is. It's also, if you see Exodus, you don't learn about the word Passover a great deal about that, and certainly not Ten Commandments either. It's
a different form of tablet these days, Richard. It's one of those computer-based things, I believe.
Well, you could be right, and of course, if you look at the creation of Charlton Heston's beard at the end of the Ten Commandments, 1956 version, I think the less said about that, the better. The movie did deliver with Heston. I mean, the iconic biblical moment is Heston's, behold his mighty hand. No doubt about that at all. And the golden calf orgies and the flight out of Egypt. Very good indeed in 56. But the script of that movie was pretty pathetic, quite frankly. I mean, it was a very good children's Bible story. And then see that, and then see Exodus, Gods and Kings, if indeed you like that subject.
So over the festive period, I'll confess that I have treated myself to a screening of 12 of the Carry On movies, of which there were 31, and I'll probably work my way through all 31, although I might have to give Carry On Columbus a miss. It's particularly interesting getting the DVD commentaries with respect to the surviving stars of the Carry On series. Do you think that in terms of humour we'll ever get another series of films which, other than Bond of course, have that kind of longevity? Because Carry On, for often scorned and sort of seen very much as the picture postcard, cheap and cheerful, Gerard Rogers cheapy scenario, they've actually sort of entered British comedy legends now in the same way as the Ealing comedies did. But they did so much more than the Ealing comedies, of course.
But they were different in the sense that the Ealing comedies were of a particular standard. I mean, you're looking at Kind Hearts and Coronets and Lady Killers, two of the greatest films made.
Are you saying that Carry On Dick is not necessarily an accurate representation of Dick Turpin and his highway opportunities?
How right you are. I mean, now I think of it, I can't imagine. I never saw it, I have to say. I mean, carrion of the Khyber, all of this stuff. Initially, with Carrion Nurse and Carrion Sergeant, Carrion Constable, they scored some very funny movies. After Carrion Cruising, I think it went downhill, and that went on for a long time. They have their niche, as the Hammer horror films have, obviously, a niche in the case of...
And Hammer, of course, has made a sequel to The Woman in Black, of course, that comes up very shortly.
Even the trailer, that is terrifying for me.
Oh, dear. And I didn't think you watched trailers, so that could be even more startling.
Unfortunately, when it came to The Woman in Black, I was in the cinema, and I normally close my eyes and shut my ears. You're absolutely right. But it has to be said. Don't watch them. No, I've seen the Exodus trailer now, and it showed scenes of parts of all the marvellous pieces in the film. It really is a shame, but a trailer has to sell the film, and you sell it through the spectacle. There's no other way of doing it. But, they should be avoided. No, the carry-ons, for those who like... It's really Miss Jean Brodie, for those who like that sort of thing, that is the sort of thing they like, because they did become very hammy, and I didn't see them towards the end. So the early ones, yes, 31 of them, I think it was excessive, but I don't think, I wouldn't mention them in the same breath as the Ealing comedies, because there was so much more to those, and Whiskey Galore, there was a lot of fun, apart from Passport to Pemlico. They're not on the same level as Lady Killers and Kind Hearts and Coronets, but they were among the best comedies ever made. So you're really looking, I think, at a different level there.
Got to be honest that although I have actually watched them, I've watched them pretty much with a fairly straight face and found very little that could be defined as amusing in them. But,
why watch them?
I just felt as though one needed to do it.
There's so much more. There's so many movies. You could have seen Birdman, or you could have watched The Skeleton Twins. You could have caught up with Belle and for Jackie if you haven't seen them, or The Homeless Man and The Invisible Woman.
Very true.
Surely.
Well, maybe it's just taking me in the universe, opening up a whole new area for me. I think it
must be. Yeah. You did see the Grand Budapest Hotel, Calvary,
You see, exactly. These are obviously things which will probably emerge in one of the features we're running today, which is Paul Terry's Top 10 of Everything 2015. We'll be speaking to BAFTA award-winning director Graham Harper shortly. And indeed, Katie Grimmison will be updating us on what she's been doing in Birmingham over the period. But Richard, we talked about movies, talked about the Royals. One of the other aspects which is very much key to the sort of things you actually do is your work as an ace publicist for the National Portrait Gallery. What sort of things...
Sorry, the Royal Society of Portrait Painters.
The Royal Society of Portrait Painters. Let's get the research right. Any sort of highlights we can look forward to in 2015 as far as that's concerned?
Yes, indeed. In April, there will be the annual exhibition of the Society, and I think that will be absolutely fascinating. There will also be a new prize, which is sponsored by Seven Investment Management, and that is the Conversation Prize, and it will have artists painting individuals either... too often on a particular canvas, having a conversation in some form, or having a conversation with, so to speak, the viewer. It should be absolutely fascinating to see how a topic, thinking historically back in the days of Reynolds and Zoffany and Hogarth, you had films of, paintings of that sort, where you had individuals talking to each other, and this will be a very interesting experiment, and to see how a conversation today will be depicted by some of the members. And of course we'll have over 200 portraits by over 120 painters, and that will be, I hope, one of the shows of the year. It certainly was last year, and we had a huge amount of publicity for it, and there was a great deal of attention also drawn to an academic who was wished to be painted in the nude, and talked about it a lot. And it was quite a feature in many of the papers.
See, I'd consider that, but only if you actually had started off a starting price of at least six figures. It need to be at least six figures, and then I might consider it. But other than that, it's not going to happen.
Well, it's very interesting, though, to see how portraiture has survived and how well it's doing today.
As we look out over a frosty country, as the thing sort of verges through as we head from 2014 into 2015, anything you're most looking forward to as we approach, as I say, the 15th year of the 21st century, or even the 16th year, technically, of the 21st century?
Well, firstly, as always, I'm forever, and I can't obviously discuss what's in the list, but I'm forever interested in the honours list. The Queen regards investitures as the most important thing she does, and we very shortly will learn the names in the New Year's honours. Many are called, few are chosen, and these days, in recent lists, the emphasis has been on philanthropy, on lists, on names given by members of the public, and also many more women getting honours and getting top honours, and it's, I think the system has changed over recent years tremendously well.
And that's something we'll be looking ahead to ourselves, or looking back to, for the first Thursday morning package, of course, which is on sirenonline.co.uk, our sister station for Southside Broadcasting, which will be happening on Thursday the 8th of January, just before the start of the 2015 London Boat Show. Richard, it's been fabulous as ever, just getting a sort of brief seasonal sort of viewpoint in terms of how things are going in betwixt all sorts of other bits and pieces. Remember, you can always listen again to all of Richard's pieces with us via southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com.
Incidentally, I thought I ought, just to balance things, way delight and dole, to say the worst film of the year was undoubtedly Grace of Monaco.
Another one I haven't seen as yet. Maybe I should actually sort of put that together with a sort of nice double bill with Australia, which I feel is obviously sort of the height to which Nicole Kidman had obviously sort of driven her career so superbly. Maybe we actually counterbalance that with obviously Grace and Monaco, which would be quite good.
And Pompeii was terrible. Amazing Spider-Man 2, Sex Tape. Very disappointing, The Monuments Men, Labor Day, and so on.
Let's focus on the positive, Richard Fitzwilliams.
I do, because this has been a year which has had some fantastic movies. Almost all of them have been. It's just simply, when you talk about the good, it's always good to remember the bad, and then you can appreciate those that have so much excellence so much better.
Or the possible ugly. But that's another spaghetti western.
Yes, well, that series was... but certainly one that no one ever forgot.
Yes. So I take it you've had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
I most certainly have.
And you will be back, as we've said, probably in about a week and a bit's time, on Thursday, November the 8th.
I look forward to it enormously.
Parkville is a purpose-built residential care centre situated at the heart of Middlesbrough and providing personalised care in a modern and homely environment. Parkville aims to help older people to continue to live independent and active lives within the wider community whilst benefiting from the care and support of an experienced and dedicated team of nursing and care staff. At Parkville, we provide facilities to accommodate elderly residential and nursing service users. To find out more, please telephone 01642 223334 or visit our website at parkvillecarecentre.com. Parkville Care Centre. Care to call us home.
In today's crowded world, it's sometimes hard to get heard. And sometimes you need a little extra push to be heard. That's where Manila PR can help. We specialise in online radio and press for independent bands, with prices to match, and have been doing so for the last decade. So if you have a noise to make, make it with Manila. Visit ManilaPR.com now.
Parkville is a purpose-built residential care centre situated at the heart of Middlesbrough and providing personalised care in a modern and homely environment. Parkville aims to help older people to continue to live independent and active lives within the wider community whilst benefiting from the care and support of an experienced and dedicated team of nursing and care staff. At Parkville, we provide facilities to accommodate residential elderly and residential EMI service users. To find out more, please telephone 01642 223334. That's 01642 223334. Parkville Care Centre. Care to call us home.
Hundred. The strokes affect 130,000 people in England and Wales each year. Here's a recipe that can dramatically decrease your chances of strokes.
Excellent. I better get a pen.
167 grams of calcium, 225
grams of magnesium, 3 grams of zinc. Hang on. I've got a pen.
Remember, any more than one tablespoon could kill you. Any less than one tablespoon could kill you.
Right, what was the recipe?
That's the recipe.
Oh,
if you would like a more simple solution, you can always call Pharma Nord on 01670 519989.
All right.
Or visit the website pharmanord.co.uk.
Let me see if I can jot that down. What was the number again?
01670 519989. Or visit the website pharmanord.co.uk.
And how do you spell Pharma Nord, I wonder?
pharmanord.co.uk.
It's almost as if I'm having a conversation with the radio.
Don't be silly, that's impossible.
Pharma Nord, winning the war of nutrition.
You're listening to a Southside Broadcasting podcast. Southside Broadcasting is a media company which aims to provide a wide range of features from the rural, health and lifestyle worlds. You can regularly listen to entertaining podcasts with interviews and correspondents from Los Angeles, Nashville, New York and London. You can take part in our Book of the Month features, grab some great nutritional advice, enjoy broadcasts from the Great Yorkshire Show, the Lincolnshire Show, and enjoy local football reviews with our regular feature, Fly Me to the Moon. You can even hear a BAFTA award-winning director drive a train full of teddy bears. You can listen to these and many more podcasts at southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com. For further information on how you can join over 35,000 people who regularly download our podcasts, call us on 01642 854 742 or email info@southsidebroadcasting.com now.
With a high-spec accommodation, all with ensuite facilities and high-quality care for residents provided 24/7 by qualified nurses and carers, Roseville Care Centre provides the perfect home for its residents' emotional, spiritual, social, physical and intellectual needs.
A purpose-built residential care facility in the heart of Ingleby Barwick, Roseville is a care centre which provides facilities to accommodate residential nursing and dementia service users, offering both short and long stay accommodation, as well as respite and daycare.
To find out more, please telephone 01642 30 81 88 or email us at roseville@prestigegroup.uk.com.
Roseville Care Centre. Care to call
from
us
Airwolf,
home.
Magnum PI, and St. Elsewhere, Native Voices and Days of Our Lives, this is Jean Bruce Scott congratulating you on your excellent taste for choosing this station and podcast.
Thank you very much, Jean. So we get a message from Ed Wellman, which goes, just picked this up. Sorry, plans all changed and had to reschedule. Just went out of my mind. Am in Siren, putting everything on auto for a few days. Not sure exactly how next few days pan out, but still aiming to get up to the northeast. Apologies for crossed wires, re today. Why are we bothering reading an Ed Wellman message? Well, actually, because he was going to be the mystery voice for our next superlative guest on this magical little pre-New Year show. We featured Richard Fitzwilliams, of course. Graham Harper, our BAFTA award-winning director, is coming up as well. But now, she is a legend. She is Birmingham's finest. We say those wonderful words. Katie Grimerson, how are you?
Oh, I'm good, thank you. It's nice to be talking to you again.
Well, you're always with us, Katie. That's the important thing, in spirit, if not in physical form. And one day, who knows, you might make it up to the northeast as well. Still, how's Birmingham these days?
Yeah, it's been really good. I'm a bit sad Christmas is over, though.
Well, it'll be back again in about 364 days, or say 360-odd days now. Countdown to 2015 Christmas already starts.
I found that each year it just gets quicker and quicker, how it just goes by.
It's part of the illusions of life, Katie. But you're here for a very important thing, because you're going to actually help us through this Paul Terry book, The Top 10 of Everything 2015, which we're still offering as part of a prize. We offered it on part of Parsec as well. Would you like to give me a number between, let's say, 10 and, oh, let's go up to 297.
199.
So obviously going for your age there, straight away. the bicentenary package there. And on page 199, you've got actually the best festivals from around the world. With
Oh, that sounds interesting.
Exactly. An extreme fact that the first ever download festival was actually held in 2003 in the same Donington Park Motorsports Circuit location where the Monsters of Rock Revival Festival ran from 1980 to 1996. Linkin Park performed their 2008 debut album Hybrid Theory in full.
Oh, like Linkin Park!
See, it's just become a win-win situation, hasn't it, really, in that sense? And indeed, that hybrid situation of Linkin Park was presented in full at Download 2014. But in terms of the top 10 lists of areas that we've actually got here, well, at number 10, it's Castle Palooza, which is in Ireland. World DJ is the ninth most popular festival, or best festival, music festival. That's in South Korea. Interesting, worth checking out next year. Number 8, the Lake of Stars in Africa. Number 7, in New Zealand, the Rhythm and Vines Festival. Donau in Selfist. Donau in Selfist is the number 6 one in Austria, I should say. And Summer Sonic is the fifth most popular festival that takes place in Japan. In Soundwave, coming at number 4 from Australia. Masters of Rock, number 3 from the Czech Republic. Download from the UK in at number 2. And the most popular, best festival from around the world was indeed Coachella in the United States of America. There we are.
I think I picked a good page number there. I do like my rock music.
I thought you might work through that.
It's fine.
Well, there we are. Donau in Selfest is apparently a free open air music festival held on Donauinsel, an island in Vienna, Austria, with visitors reaching the 3 million mark. More than 1,500 people volunteer to help run the event. So there we are. It's Donau Inselfest, or literally sort of on the island of Donau in Vienna, Austria. Would you like to have a guess in terms of the largest festivals in the world? If I actually give you the name of the festival, would you like to guess basically where it actually happens to be?
Go on, then I'll try my best.
Okay. In at number 10, Pucklepop. Pucklepop. Where do you think that
might be? Oh, I've heard of that. Is it Germany?
Close. It's Belgium.
Oh!
attendance per day of 62,500 people making their way to Pucklepop per day. Number 2 is Zsiget. Number 9 is Zsiget, with an attendance per day of 65,000. Where do you think Zsiget happens to be?
Is it a European country an international?
It is both, actually. It's a European.
Is it France?
It isn't France, it's Hungary.
Oh, I'm not very good at my geography skills.
I think you'll get the next one, because joint eighth position, with 75,000 people attending per day, we have Coachella and Reading and Leeds. So that's Coachella and Reading and Leeds. So
you've just said Coachella and it's gone out my head.
I know. That would be the United States of America. Okay.
And then in, UK.
Reading and Leeds, 75%. Number 6, we have Exit, which is also with a sort of 75,000 per day. That's coming in there. Exit, that's in Serbia. And number 5, I think you should get this, Tea in the Park.
UK.
Would you like to give me a specific country?
England.
Scotland. 85,000. Yes, close. You know, you did very well here. At least, you know, maybe it's not the subject to take if you're going on Mastermind. Rock Al Park in at 4th position with 88,600 people attending per day.
I've got a feeling this is going to be some kind of Mediterranean country.
Bit further south. It's Columbia.
Yeah, I was going to say that, but I should have just said it.
Exactly. And in joint second place, we have Rock Werchter and Roskilde, both with attendances per day of 110,000.
Germany.
Belgium and Colombia. Okay.
Oh!
And we also have Roskilde in Denmark with 110,000 in second place. But in first place, the largest festival in the world for this wall of sound, with 175,000 attending per day. Would you like to give me a guess in terms of where you think it is?
No.
Not even a sort of a general guess. I'm sure you, as yet, you haven't performed on the pyramid.
Russia?
No. As yet, you haven't performed there, Katie, but I'm sure it's a matter of time.
I don't know. It's
Glastonbury.
Oh!
The popularity of the UK's Glastonbury Festival has been increasing rapidly over the past decade. The 2013 festival saw all of its 135,000 tickets sold in just 1 hour and 40 minutes, which was indeed a new record from that point of view. So there we are, Glastonbury. Have you attended any of those as yet? You haven't been to Glastonbury and enjoyed the mud as yet, Katie.
No, I'm not really. I like watching them on TV, but I don't actually think I could go to one because I don't like the fact that you have to camp and, I don't know, not wash.
You're too much of a sophisticated high-heels girl, basically, aren't you? That's
I am. Yeah, I suppose I could go in a caravan, but I'm not. I don't know, can you go in a caravan there? I'm not sure.
I'm sure that there are ways in which, for yourself, Katie, we can sort of get something sorted out on that basis, certainly. Yeah, that's the key thing on that side of things. Brilliant stuff. Okay, moving on. Do you want to, would you like to take a few sort of initial sort of choices on popular music?
I'll basically give
you three answers. All you need to do is select the correct answer.
Yeah, this could be fun.
you can play along as well in your own particular way, so it's marvellous stuff here. Okay, so the first one is the most downloaded song of all time. Do you know what that might be? The most downloaded song of all time.
Oh, no.
So, well, it's by the Black Eyed Peas. Does that actually sort of help at all? Would you like to...
Is it Where Is the Love? That's the only one I know.
Oh, dear. I mean, you don't know this one.
Oh!
the most downloaded song of all time.
I do know that one. That used to be played at Coventry Speedway.
I'm not surprised.
I used to watch that.
But what's it called?
I got a feeling.
Exactly. Yes, well done. Congratulations. We didn't think we'd get there, but we have. Okay, so the question for that, and we've got it's the most downloaded song of all time. It's the Black Eyed Peas, and I Got a Feeling. By how many units, or how many units, has it actually sold? How many units has it actually sold?
Oh, I'm not even going to attempt to guess because then I'll be wrong.
Well, would you actually give me a choice of the thing for this sort of side of things? Okay, we can offer you either 6,739,000, A, or B, 8,438,000, or C, 12,482,000.
C.
Ah, it was B, 8,438,000.
That was close.
Very, very close. Choice of one in three. And you selected the wrong one. But never mind. That's perfectly okay from that sort of point of view. All is good from that point of view. We just had confirmation that Graham Harper will be with us. He has now returned and everything else will be sorted through. Final sort of chance to sort of redeem yourself here, Katie. Would you like to hazard a guess in terms of the most successful solo tour of 2013 or the most successful band or group tour of 2013? Because we're still obviously collating 2014 numbers for this.
I'll go for the band one.
You're going to go for the band. Well, what do you think the most successful band tour was with a total gross of $205,158,000? $1,000 from their 90 shows that they actually put together in 2013, what do you think the band in question were?
I've got a feeling that it's going to be someone like One Direction.
Do you? Hmm.
Yeah.
Would you like a clue then?
Yeah.
Here's your clue. Does that help at all?
Pet Shop Boys.
No. One Direction are actually there. They're the fifth most successful band or group tour. Depeche Mode are actually at number four. The Rolling Stones are at number three. Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band at number two. But it's this group of people who are in at number one. Have you not got any idea at all?
Oh, Bon Jovi!
Exactly! Yes, there we are.
That sounded like Pet Shop Boys.
Highly likely, but not in this particular instance, yes. But Bon Jovi, the group who effectively sort of came in there with almost twice as much as Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band. Your suggestion of One Direction was absolutely right, but they only came in at number five. Jay-Z and Justin Timberlake were in at number six. Fleetwood Mac at number seven. Maroon 5 at number eight. Dave Matthews Band, number nine. Iron Maiden at 10. As yet, no sign of Broken Mitt Rebels.
Wit Rebels.
That's the reason there is no sign. It's very close. You know, one of these days we'll get the whole thing sorted through.
Have you listened to them yet, Alex?
Yes, I have. And as I say, I'm happy to feature them on the programme in 2015. If you can sort of do your magic and sort things through, I'm sure we can get something sorted out for there. So, marvellous stuff there. So, Katie, what a fantastic sort of event that has actually been. I mean, I think we've had a look at some of those musical tours, all sorts of other areas within that whole system. We could have gone into the most successful music biopics, the top 10 songs about money, Material Girl in at number 10 for that one, Money for Nothing, number 9, I Need a Dollar, Allo Black. Is it Allo Black? Oh, Allo Black, anyway.
Yeah, Allo Black.
Money, Money, Money at 7, Rich with the Yeah Yeah Yeahs, Money Talks by AC/DC, Price Tag by Jesse J, Money in God We Trust with the Extreme, and Can't Buy Me Love, the Beatles and Dollars and Cents, Radiohead, heap of other good things from that point of view, but obviously the most successful band that we actually had, John Bon Jovi, who would have, I think Nicky Wells would have appreciated that, but there we are, that's another line. Katie, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic chat, even though we couldn't provide Ed Wellman to do a mystery voice for you, so you could have actually said, it's you, Ed Wellman, I claim my £500 million.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed it. A bit sad that I wasn't very good with the questions, but
But just think how you can actually play the podcast back and you'll know all the answers spot on. You know, so you know, the magic will actually open up in its own sort of unique way. So there's no need to worry about that at all. So, I take it then, as we approach 2015, you'll be up to join us, probably on location, but certainly, as say, in person in the not-too-distant future, as well as, obviously, telephonically. Will you return?
Yeah, I will.
Yay, exactly. Katie Grimason, season's greetings for 2014 into 2015, and have a great new year. Happy Hognoman. Do you celebrate Hogmanay in Birmingham, or is it a case of, no, that's far too Scottish for us? We just say Happy New Year.
No, I don't think we do.
No, there we are.
Happy New Year to you as well.
Well, there you go. Katie Grimason, take care. Speak soon.
Bye.
Parkville is a purpose-built residential care centre situated at the heart of Middlesbrough and providing personalised care in a modern and homely environment. Parkville aims to help older people to continue to live independent and active lives within the wider community whilst benefiting from the care and support of an experienced and dedicated team of nursing and care staff. At Parkville, we provide facilities to accommodate residential elderly and residential EMI service users. To find out more, please telephone 01642 223334. That's 01642 223334. Parkville Care Centre. Care to call us home.
His strokes affect 130,000 people in England and Wales each year. He is a recipe that can dramatically decrease your chances of strokes.
Excellent. I better get a pen.
167 grams of calcium.
Hang on. Slow down. One tablespoon.
Remember, any more than one tablespoon could kill you. Any less than one tablespoon could kill you.
Right, what was
the recipe? That's the recipe.
Oh,
if you would like a more simple solution, you can always call Farmer Nord on 01670 519989.
All right.
Or visit the website farmernord.co.uk.
Let me see if I can jot that down. What was the number again?
01670 519989. Or visit the website farmernord.co.uk.
And how do you spell Farmer Nord, I wonder?
PHARMANORD.co.uk.
It's almost as if I'm having a conversation with the radio.
Don't be silly, that's impossible.
Farmer Nord, winning the war of nutrition.
You're listening to a Southside Broadcasting podcast. Southside Broadcasting is a media company which aims to provide a wide range of features from the rural, health and lifestyle worlds. You can regularly listen to entertaining podcasts with interviews and correspondents from Los Angeles, Nashville, New York and London. You can take part in our Book of the Month features, grab some great nutritional advice, enjoy broadcasts from the Great Yorkshire Show, the Lincolnshire Show, and enjoy local football reviews with our regular feature, Fly Me to the Moon. You can even hear a BAFTA award-winning director drive a train full of teddy bears. You can listen to these and many more podcasts at southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com. For further information on how you can join over 35,000 people who regularly download our podcasts, call us on 01642 854 742 or email info@southsidebroadcasting.com now.
So, as promised, we started off this little festive soiree with Richard Fitzwilliams, of course, and his views over the year. Katie Grimerson join us from Birmingham. But now, pièce de résistance time, of course. It's time to welcome our BAFTA award-winning director extraordinaire, the main man, of course, Graham Harper. Graham, how are you?
Oh, hello. Hi, Alexis, and hello, everyone. Oh, I'm happy.
Well, and so you should be, because if you're not happy, well, it's just not worth considering. You know, you just have to be happy, whatever the situation happens to be. And you're currently about to start working again on Casualty, it would seem.
I am. I did. I've been booked for a block before Christmas, so I've shot one episode just before Christmas. We have a 10-day break. On a Monday, I'll start shooting the next one.
In terms of your time in, obviously, the televisual world and the world of making classic dramas and period dramas and so on, have there been any times when you've actually sort of worked through the Christmas period, or has there always tended to be a case of, no, we shut down now?
Yes, I think throughout the whole of my career, it's always been a shutdown, but what happened in the early part of my career, I still got paid, but now all the companies everywhere, I think outside of film and television, every company, if you, well, at least I think most companies don't pay you. They give you a 10-day break and they don't pay. I'm talking about for freelance work.
Now, speaking of that, of course, as I confessed to Richard Fitzwilliams, what I have done over the Christmas period is take the opportunity to actually watch, not one, not two, but as it stands, probably around about 17 of the 31 Carry On movies that were actually made. Yeah, I know. I don't know why I've done it either, because, you know, it's extraordinary in all sorts of ways. Although Carry On, Don't Lose Your Head has got moments. Most of them have. Probably because Sally Geeson will be joining us in the new year, and she was in Carry On Girls, amongst other things. But that was something where an awful lot of the actors quite shocked me in terms of the DVD commentary, the surviving actors, of course. But they were very much sort of kept to the bare basics of that. And it seems amazing that in an era where, obviously, the Carry On movies generated so much income for Peter Rogers in terms of the producers and the production staff, etc., that even towards the end of their lives, the likes of Joan Sims and so on just didn't even get a hand of it. They were on a flat rate contract. It wasn't good. Were you aware of this carry-on debacle in the industry, Graham? And is that one of the reasons why the reason you didn't actually take over from Gerald Rogers to actually direct a carry-on movie? It's just a case of, no, I'm not going to settle for that. I'd rather stick with the BBC.
I was never offered, so I didn't have the choice, really. I do find that shocking over the years that none of them really made very much money, although I'm sure the likes of Sid James and Barbara Windsor did. I don't know, maybe they didn't. Maybe they're all on a flat rate, as you say. I have no idea. It just seemed a bit mean, doesn't it?
I would have thought so. Of course, I think that the thing that they're most concerned about, even with the ones who survived, like Jim Dale and so on, is that no residuals, because they didn't appreciate that, of course, the movies would have an overseas sale rate. Apparently, Carry On is huge in the Eastern Bloc countries, the former Eastern Bloc countries. There are a whole new audience there, which probably explains Vladimir Putin, when you come to think of it, basing his entire sort of basis on Sid James and company, or Peter Butterworth from the Carry On series. Then is it any wonder that Russia is developing as it is? Carry on, comrade. That's my thought for the new year. Yes, carry on, comrade. We can actually sort of look at a whole new thing. This could be a sequel to Carry On Spying.
As long as you're not Carry On Boris.
Well, of course not. I've offset my carry-on binge in terms of DVD, and really I should have actually been marking essays and various other factors, but offset that with the opening nine episodes of the BBC classic serial War and Peace, if only to actually check out the fantastic work of Alan Dobie as Prince Bolkonski, and of course Anthony Hopkins as Pierre Bezukhov, but also to see in the battle scenes if I could spot a young Graham Harper checking out which parts of the explosives were due to be taking place in. Because if memory serves, you actually had a part to play in that series, War and Peace.
I did. I was... there were two... the BBC called them assistant floor managers, but in fact the job was split between art direction. So an art director makes sure all the props that are required for the script are on the set and in the right hands of which actor or dressing or whatever. Not the dressing props, but the props like books and things that might be picked up and read, they're properly put in place as per a rehearsal period that we did in rehearsal room somewhere, so I knew where everything had to be when actors walked in and picked up things. That's where things were placed. The other part of the job was like a second assistant director, which is to organise on behalf of the first assistant director all the comings and goings of all the artists, transport, weapons, equipment, whatever, the transportation and the logistics side of it all. So that's what I did. And I went to Yugoslavia for two periods of 3 months each to do just that work. But the difference between that job and any other job is that you're talking about, we had 1,000 soldiers, so I had to make sure that all the weaponry that those soldiers would have, whether they were Russian or French, were the right weapons and they were in the right place and with the armour given to the right people.
And looking at it now, I mean, it's interesting that BBC Radio 4 are actually doing a 12-hour back-to-back on New Year's Day of an audio adaptation of War and Peace, the classic Leo Tolstoy novel, of course. Do you think we'll ever... I mean, I know that War and Peace at its time was a co-production, but those of us who are around remember the sort of the way in which it was hailed as a whole new epic, you know, the likes of, you know, the Forsyth saga, forget it, you know, forget John Galsworthy, etc. This was the sort of event. Do you think the BBC would ever dare to do something like that in current times, or do you think those days have long gone?
No, I think they would. But now it would be done as a major co-production. Well, I think that was.
Wasn't it was,
yes. Done as a major co-production between about five different companies, so the money is spread, you know, the budget is spread through, and rewards are given too, obviously, through a variety of channels or production companies, as opposed to Time Life, or I mean, it was probably Time Life, wasn't it? Or,
it was.
Yeah. So that would be the difference. Yeah, we do. I mean, they do. Downton doesn't cost up Haven. I mean, that's an expensive production, and I'm sure that's a big co-production with an American company, or maybe several.
And I gather that the occupiers of the location for Downton Abbey have actually put in a price hike for a subsequent series to possibly go up to £1 million for their hiring of the whole thing, which could be quite interesting. There's rumours that they might actually be changing the location as a result of that. Still, what the heck?
Well, except Downton Abbey is Downton Abbey, so once it's established, and it's making money, the programme, I'm sure, all over the world, I suspect they'll probably pay.
Well, who knows? That's the one thing. We couldn't let you go without some consideration. Well, actually, before we depart from War and Peace, have you ever seen it recently? Because, ironically, in many ways, I find it far more amusing than the Carry On films in certain instances. Maybe it was the mannerisms of some of the actors that were actually in there. No names, but, you know, it was quite amusing in its own sort of sense.
Why are you talking about Anthony Hopkins?
Listen, you could take a whole range of even Colin Baker, who was amazingly in there.
He was a very handsome young... I can't remember his name, but...
Exactly. It was Morag Hood, who was also around for the whole thing. We had the fabulous Rupert Davis, who for many years I kind of realised that Rupert Davis was the voice of Professor Ian McLean, the stepfather of a certain Joe McLean, a.k.a. Joe 90, for the Gerry Anderson series.
Oh, right.
So, Rupert Davis was in there. In the same way, I still thought there were, unintentionally maybe, there were sort of odd sort of actions which you just thought, this is just surreal, but maybe it's just a case of looked at from the 21st century to what was a production of the early 1970s. Maybe it's just a case of it just looked unusual. However, moving on from that basis, did you manage to catch the Christmas special of that man from Gallifrey, or is it Galilee? No, it's Gallifrey. Of course, the Doctor Who Christmas special.
I'm afraid I didn't. Oh. I had such a big family gathering, we did not watch television at all on Christmas Day.
And you see, that's the reason why TV audiences are dropping. Do you know, this year saw the first ever slump in the number of television sales that were actually made, that actually TV sales, actually in terms of people purchasing televisions, that's actually dropping for the first time since televisions came on as a product. And indeed, the companies accordingly are having to change the way in which people are actually... I actually only watched the Doctor Who Christmas special 2 days ago, and I watched it on my newly acquired smart mobile phone.
Josh, you're guilty.
Exactly. Exactly.
So what did you think of that?
I thought it was okay, actually. I think it was called Last Christmas. I was a bit worried in case George Michael was going to put in an appearance and do a sort of Wham signal, but no, we still had Slade and Merry Christmas, everybody, and overall. It did feature a young actress who is born in Middlesbrough, who I think we might be hearing one or two more things of as the year proceeds. And don't ask me what her name is, because I'll find out. I'll find out by the end of this conversation what the name of the Middlesbrough-born actress actually was. Exactly. But in addition to that, I thought they did. And of course, Clara Oswald is staying on for the series. So she will be there for the next series of Doctor Who, which of course kicks off in the autumn of 2015. Anyway, moving on for that particular aspect, if I was to actually say, the only way I could really appreciate the joys of Hollyoaks is on a mobile phone, would you say that's right? Or would you say, no, it should be a big screen?
Well, I think the train crash should have been on a big screen, not on a telephone, definitely. You need to see the epicness of it.
Yeah. So why wasn't it released in cinemas? Tell me that, Phil Redmond. It should have gone out in cinemas, etc. Any chance of you returning to Hollyoaks, or has that piece sort of gone for the moment?
They've asked. I mean, they asked if I'd come back, and I said yes, but I haven't been asked to a particular date. I will see what happens. I hope some other things will come up as well, but I did enjoy it. I really enjoyed working on the production.
Excellent. So, also looking today at the top 10 of everything 2015 by Paul Turry, who, when he's not the editor of Lost magazine and various other things, has come up with a range of facts and figures, which we've been, we had a little bit of fun with Katie Griffiths. And I'll put the same questions to your good self, or different questions, obviously, Graham. Can you give me a number between 10 and 306, please?
306. Ooh, 306. 277.
277. Okay, let's just sort of work our way through that particular side of things. We can also actually now reveal that the name of the actress that we were desperately trying to actually sort of work. Oh, sorry.
Hold on.
Funny enough, I was just getting the Doctor Who full cast and crew.
Alexis, I'm so sorry. There's someone knocking on the door.
Right. That's fine. Yeah, see, it's that sort of excitement that makes it much more interesting. You see, you just don't know what's going to happen in every sense of the word. That somebody could be knocking at the Harper door, and they realise that he's actually on radio as well, and the live radio broadcast continues in its own merry way, and, well, this is just a joyous time and joyous thing, and etc.
I'm so sorry.
That's okay. Have you sorted it out? Has it all been...
My things have arrived, yes. It's a
parcel. There we go.
It's a parcel.
Funny enough, actually, we still haven't sent you your official calendar, because you are featured in the 2015 Southside Broadcasting calendar. So
I want to see that.
You will do. You would have actually been presented with it at the London Boat Show, but tragically, you'll be back at casualty time then, when we're actually down for the press show on the 9th of January.
Bernadette prayed, thank you, God.
Well, there you go.
Because she thought I might spend money on a boat.
Exactly. A sun seeker will be fine. Which was the number again, Graham? I've temporarily mislaid it.
277.
277. I thought that was exactly... Well, 277 actually neatly brings us to the best... this is interesting. The greatest chess players of the world that we've actually got. So the greatest chess players. The greatest chess player apparently with 27 world championship title is Emmanuel Lasker.
Wow.
Emmanuel Lasker, halfway through his 1894 to 1921 chess championship reign, effectively sort of also wrote extensively about philosophy and mathematics. To become a master of chess requires a ton of brain power and the ability to predict the game's potential progress several moves ahead. So Garry Kasparov is at number 4. Emmanuel Lasker is from Germany. In fact, actually, everybody else seems to be from Russia, Austria, India, or Cuba. There's not a single Brit in the greatest ever top 10 chess players.
My goodness me. I'm surprised.
There we are. It's just one of those key aspects. You were asking, actually you weren't asking, but you were sort of, we sort of mentioned that we did have a list of the Doctor Who system that was actually around, and who this character was who was actually part of the Doctor Who thing. We thought we'd actually got that whole piece sorted out for your good self. We still haven't. So, you know, it's obviously there. This is what you come of trying to multitask, trying to pull up these details without realizing that things are actually there and sorted through. So we'll have to wait on that moment. We'll hold it up.
You said something strange just now. You said you saw War and Peace, and it was in 10 episodes, but we did 20 episodes.
Oh, no, I've only seen the first 10, is what I said. No, I mean, I felt I had to sort of give some time to the Carry On movie marathon that I was actually working through.
Really?
I think
I'll start with War and Peace.
Do you think so?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. you also watched the beginning of the massive career that Tony Hopkins had. That was what brought him to the fore, as it were, made him a household name. And in that story, and you've probably seen it if you watched 10 episodes, there's a moment where he, I don't know whether he claimed that he could ride a horse ever as a young actor, but he certainly can't, or didn't in those days. And there's a shot of the real Tony Hopkins from behind riding up. Well, you see him riding up a hill, and he's almost falling off it. He's sideways as he goes up the hill. So that's one little moment that is Pierre, if you see what I mean. Not a great moment.
Oh, yeah, but whereas he might not have been able to ride a horse, he certainly did a good job of possibly eating one. And, so that's a different line entirely from that point of view.
Horse eater. Yeah.
Well, yeah, obviously not. I think it was kidney beans or liver or various other factors that were coming through within that. Moving on. So this is one of those rare times also when you've spent the Christmas period in Britain as opposed to over in France. How's that been for you, Graham?
It was absolutely delightful. Look, going to France for Christmas and being on the south coast and looking at the Med is beautiful. It's a different kind of Christmas, though, because they don't have turkey so much. They eat goose or capon. So the taste is slightly different. It's not the same Christmas that you would normally be having at home, as it were, but it's still a very nice Christmas. This was delightful. It was a proper turkey Christmas, and we all enjoyed it. And guess what? We didn't overstuff ourselves this time or get drunk, so it was wonderful.
See, balance, moderation in all things. Faye Marzi is the Middlesbrough-born actress who went off to the Bristol Old Vic, who actually portrayed Shona McCulloch in the last episode of Doctor Who entitled Last Christmas. See, we got there in the end. That's the important thing.
Yeah, Faye Marzi.
Faye Marcy.
Okay.
Yeah, I think she could develop sort of quite nice theatre. If she actually gets directed by a good soul, Graham, then I think her career will go stratospheric. But you know, that's a different line entirely.
Gosh.
Do we get any treats or thoughts about what you're doing with the current series of Casualty? Or is it a case of no, I can't say anything about that. Just watch and wait and see.
I think it's no, I can't say anything about it. Just wait and watch.
That's okay.
But there's some interesting developments in it. Definitely a big surprise and. Nice surprise. A good surprise, just like when Dylan turned up again.
Oh. And when is it likely to be screened?
April.
Marvellous.
Yes, during April. Yeah, they're good. I do like Casualty. I like working on it. The people are fun to work with, all of them, the whole crew and all the artists. And it's very nice in Cardiff, so there we are.
And Sarah Douglas was in Casualty once, I believe. And she was, of course, in the Carry On movies as well. Just thought I'd throw that in there. That's the way it connects in its own sort of ways. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
It's been very interesting. Always is.
Well, there we are. We've sort of gone from chess championships right the way through to the
Carry On
and War and Peace. Which, you know, I think it's pushed it through. We thank your good self. We obviously thank Richard Fitzwilliams, who one day, hopefully in 2015, will join us as Graham. We do that long-awaited outside broadcast as we have a little wander around Elstree or Pinewood or places that you're currently sort of have occupied by your agency. I think that would be nice to actually.
Also came from Borehamwood.
Oh, well, there we are. There we are. Was it Borehamwood then? That's
Elstree Studio is Borehamwood, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
That's where I was brought up.
That's where we must actually do the studio tour one of these days.
Yeah, I think that's correct. Yeah, I'd love to do that.
That will happen. So, I take it then, the bottom line is, you will return in 2015?
I will. Thank you very much, Alexis. And I will celebrate.
Go on,
Happy
sorry.
New Year.
Exactly. Happy 2015.
From Airwolf, Magnum PI, and Saint Elsewhere, Native Voices and Days of Our Lives, this is Jean Bruce Scott congratulating you on your excellent taste for choosing this station and podcast.
Offering prestigious accommodation, ensuite facilities and high quality care for residents provided 24/7 by qualified nurses and carers, Roseville Care Centre provides the perfect home for its residents' emotional, spiritual, social, physical and intellectual needs. A purpose-built residential care facility in the heart of Ingleby Barwick, Roseville is a care centre which provides facilities to accommodate elderly residential and nursing service users, offering both short and long stay accommodation, as well as respite and daycare. To find out more, please telephone 01642 308188 or visit our website, rosevillecarecentre.com. Roseville Care Centre. Care to call us home.